This is a production of Cornell University.
Well, it's up to you.
Welcome. So welcome to our last meeting of the semester, November 26th, here just a little bit after 5:30 in the Lot Hall. We have with us a couple of guests, but while they get situated, I'm going to do our roll call. Is Alex here? Okay, great. Mia?
Yes.
Great. Trevaney? Fantastic. Bill? Congratulations on your exam. Eric is coming. Giovanna? Fantastic. Jonathan? Great. Liz?
I thought I saw Liz. Maybe I didn't see Liz.
Okay, Liz is here. I'm here. Nicole?
Here.
Alex? Moore? Not yet. Okay. Jenny? Okay, Matt?
Here.
Fantastic. Xiaoqing? Great, thanks. Rob?
Here.
Fantastic. Eric? All right. Han?
Here.
Thank you. Drew?
And Monet?
Fantastic. Thanks so much. So our first item on our agenda is our guests, David Scorton and Susan Murphy. I believe you all know them. David is our fantastic president, and Susan Murphy is our fantastic vice president for student and academic services. So what we're going to do is that we have a couple questions that we identified, and we'll go ahead and have those individuals read their questions, and then we'll take questions from the floor.
Can I say one quick thing before you start?
Yeah, please do.
I just want to thank you for the work you do all year long. I hope Mitch, Derek, and others will affirm on how important it is to me to interact with me and bring my back to you. And with all the assemblies and with the student leaders, so I think we have a meeting this week with student leaders as well. And it's really, really important. I take everything you tell us into those serious considerations. Sometimes you end up pushing us in terrible directions, so I just want to thank you for that before we have our discussion. So thanks a lot for having us.
And I'm sorry, I should have asked for it. If you want to say something first. Susan, do you want
to be a president somewhere someday? Yeah. The key thing is to eat up a little time like that in the beginning.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay, great. Hopefully the questions are very insightful and touch on a lot of topics, so I think it should address probably what you would want to talk about anyway. So, Trevaney, you had a question for us about kind of hiring and the future of the university.
Hi. So I'm wondering how the university is going to address these structural enrollment issues that come up when you try to increase diversity and sort of research excellence at Cornell. I can think of in my own department a couple of cases where we have really good scholars had to leave because they're not going to get hired or because, for whatever reason, they just not get classroom support because they're a smaller kind of town. On top of that, you also have the general drive of diversity in hiring and departments that really don't want to hire diverse candidates on their open EQ line. So I want to know what, you know, how that's playing into the university's broader goal of research.
So this is the other benefit that Mitch sent us around some of the questions and we got this one, just had a chance to look at it just a few minutes ago. It's an unbelievably important question. The last position we had was also in Polishtown at the university where we had some issues related to dual career families. And the honest answer is there's no easy answer to this one. But I'll just say a couple of things that we're doing without claiming it's going to solve the problem. First on the issue of diversity per se, I know you all are aware of this, so forgive me for repeating this, but we're trying a different tack on the current diversity initiative, so-called toward new destinations, that was developed by a group of very community people, including Dr. Murphy and others. Where instead of having one sort of chief diversity officer for the university, the accountability for being successful, not only in recruiting, but more important in the way of retaining of people with broad backgrounds is going to be distributed to all major leadership of the university. So the Board of Trustees is going to hold me accountable for certain things. And then I hold it to Provost Dr. Fox on this campus, Dr. Winter in New York City, Medical College. She will hold the Department of Medical College accountable, and Dr. Fox will hold the Dean's accountable here, and I will hold the VP's accountable. So the first point is that everyone is accountable for a complement of goals and diversity. Everyone is accountable for compositional diversity in a way that we're bringing up the composition of the campus moves in the direction of more clearly representing the society at large. But it doesn't stop there with this new plan that Dr. Murphy and others developed. I think the beauty of the plan is that everyone, all these leaders, have to choose other initiatives for which they will be accountable beyond, strictly speaking, the compositional aspect. And that will be things related to climate and general atmosphere. And that's one of the things. One of the things that makes up that is whether a dual career family, both people, can feel that they're being fulfilled and succeeding. And by the way, including even forgetting to mention about the dual career family issue, just the person coming who may be a relatively few person, relatively few people with a similar background, whatever that happens to be. So the first thing is to have a different approach to diversity where accountabilities are widely held. And we're having a meeting maybe Wednesday of this week or Thursday of this week with the sort of steering group that works with the University Diversity Council to continue to push on details of the accountability and ways to make it real and to make it clear what the impacts will be of reaching one's goals and this one. The fiscal situation at the university is such that we're not actually growing the workforce at the university, either faculty or staff. The fact is, I'm sure you all are aware, we've actually fallen to a much smaller size of staff and faculty employees, about 90% of what it used to be at the university. On the faculty, we did because of low hiring when the recession first started, and now we're planning our way back out of that. We are doing, through philanthropic efforts, some, I'm not sure what to call it exactly, sort of hiring people ahead of anticipated retirements within departments and colleges. But eventually, we expect those retirements to occur. The equilibrium will be preserved by something about the same size. So one maneuver that we don't have the finances to do is to expand, significantly expand the size of the faculty to accommodate this kind of the mechanism, which would obviously be terrific to do it. So we have to be more working at a local level and with the central officers of the university pushing using the bully pulpit, making sure that people are held accountable. But because of the fiscal realities, I want to be clear that this won't be possible to significantly expand the pool of slots under accommodate this. In particular situations based on the proclivity of the local faculty and the department, the chair and the dean, as you know, these things do happen. And I think that if we don't do enough of it, that's clear. And the retention efforts, once again, to me, are the most important long-term issue, not to downplay the importance of improvement, but especially in a climate in which, financial climate, in which it's not possible to spend as much money as we all used to before the recession. Every single time you lose someone to a situation like this, it feels like a bigger loss, even than the actual loss that it is, because the in some areas of the university is not what I wish it was, and therefore any further reduction in the next situation is even a little bit more difficult. So we're working on it, we're aware of it. I'm committed to the accountability system working and to making sure that people are held accountable, including myself. I just have to continue to make this an issue. I will also take this back, your comments, and and also the fact that Rose Pedroza, along with discussing the GPA, said back to the provost, and I had my regular meeting with him later this week, and make sure that he knows about it as well, even though he wasn't here. I would encourage you, if you think it's appropriate, it's obviously your decision, to think about having him as the provost for some time if you aren't going to do that, because, you know, he's the chief academic officer for graduate as well as undergraduate professional education, and this is a really important issue on his plate. So I appreciate you bringing that.
I might just add two other names in terms of David talked about the structure of the University Diversity Council. Our senior vice provost for academic affairs, John Silicano, is tasked with the piece of the diversity plan related to faculty and working with the dean. And he is supported by Yael Levitt, who was the staff person who staffed the advanced grants that existed for a number of years. So just as I together with Dean Hubble, have the administrative office excuse piece together with Barb News, the Dean of Graduate School, and then Lashari and Charles and Mayo Sanders. John and Yael are two people. So if you've got really particular questions, you should feel free to be in touch with them as well. John is part of Provost Fox senior leadership team, so it's Provost Fox.
And the last thing, just real quickly, as you see this issue roll out more, it's in the Final Chronicle and Daily Sun, wherever it's covered, write me directly and tell me what you think. Does it look good? Emphasize this more? It looks like you're making promise and be aware of this kind of thing. And I know that you mentioned Eric and others who come to this, assuming your meetings will continue to keep this.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Rainey. Chelsea, you had a question about. I'll let you ask your question.
My question is in regards to career needs for the growing breadth of the population, and graduate education becomes necessary for other professions. Is Cornell planning, or does it have a plan for addressing
other career needs, other than career in academia, so professional, more professional programs, which is nice. Yeah, so I hope this is accurate, an accurate statement. I think it is. It's one of those situations where, I wish the provost was also here to answer this question, but obviously the setting up a particular curriculum and degree for one of those curriculum is the future of faculty in individual colleges and departments. There has been an organic growth throughout the country, and even before this election, but even more rapidly during this election, for the proportion of people who get graduate degrees after the doctorates, more than the academic position. And so, Cornell University and other great universities have responded at the local faculty level by growing a number of Masters of Professional Studies and many other kinds of degrees. The Tech campus is another example of that. There's a lot of master's programs there. The part that I'm not sure is right, but I think is right, maybe Susan, who knows, at Hubble, I don't think there's been any university-wide decree or directive to particularly increase the number of those degrees.
No, it's really been at the department or the faculty level. I mean, the one thing that we had done, and I was just going to the website, I can't remember the answer, but we, in Central Career Services now, we do jointly fund a position with the graduate school, Baptist International half-time graduate studies, in addition to the work that some of the colleges that have large, like Mark Savage in engineering, also keeping on So in the service side, we're trying to be attentive to the issue that you're addressing, which is having some growth of professional programs, and certainly even some of our students in the MA PhD programs are pursuing non-academic career paths. So what are we doing in making sure that graduate students, A, are availing themselves of the services that already exist, that may be perceived to be undergraduate only, but are not, and how do we make sure that that is conveyed, like the career fairs and such programs. But then B, build some expertise in particular around the graduate population as well. So So that that position is just been staffed in the fall, and you know, it was needed to be sure. But the issue about will there be 5 more degree programs in human ecology or applied sciences with a professional focus is really a question of the faculty within those human ecology.
And Anne did come to our meeting. A few meetings ago, can't remember which one, but she came and talked with us, and it's a big part of our GCI update.
When I heard from this later in the week for those two meetings, if there is something else, other than myself, I'll see the focus you see now. It's a really important question.
Yeah. Sounds like we need to invite him.
Sorry?
Sounds like we do need to invite him.
Yeah.
That's right. Thanks. And Rob, you had a question about MOOCs.
Yeah, I'm Rob Moore. My question is that the Cornell Board of Trustees is currently considering the future of MOOCs at Cornell. And I was just wondering, what are some of Cornell's concerns about the MIT open courseware model, and if you thought that a model in which professors offer individual courses online, or in which the assignment and lecture notes, practice exams for the majority of courses are posted to the central website. Which of those two models more of the direction which
one
might
depend? It's too early to give a direct answer about that. The provost and the faculty is right now considering this. Aside from one of the issues of the day, at my stage in my career, you won't be surprised to know that I'm concerned that we don't go too far in a direction away from people being able to interact directly. It depends on the kind of curriculum I think. I don't want this to be interpreted as an official university response, but I think that depends on the kind of curriculum, laboratory-based curriculum, things that involve a direct interaction with a substrate that doesn't need something. Obviously, it's not what we're talking about. In terms of transfer of information, something that much more efficient to do things, my prediction is that sometime in the next few months, that you'll hear in the student provost and to the faculty leadership about a general approach. But even when that is announced, it's still going to fall, and I think should fall, to individual parts of the university discipline and specific curriculum to decide how to use even technology or platform that's set up. I can't give you a direct answer to the specifics that you're asking. I'd love to hear now, if you can take time to send me an email to data.sport, what do you think about it? Because even though there's a lot more people moving to non-academic careers, and have been, a lot of people also in academic career. And so your proclivity is people just coming out of graduate school is really important in this regard, especially given that you're still trying to train in the old system. And so you know a lot more about the capabilities of the technology to get your experience in the old system. And so maybe just an interesting time, which would you write me and tell me what you think about it? I'd like to share that directly with the provost as he's interacting with the faculty members. That'd be great. Which one?
More.
Okay. I'm on the list. If I'm the last name, I just send emails to her. Or you might do it over
there. Matt, I didn't prep you ahead of time, but you had a question about graduate space. Do you want to ask that? Do you remember its general sense?
Yeah. So I don't have it in front of me, but I'm Matthew Wilson. My question was with sort of the removal of some of the graduate student focus space in Willard's Great Hall, like Pottery Studio, with the creation of the, I think it's like Big Red Den or Bear Den, and some other spaces popular among undergrad. It sort of feels like that the student center has become more undergrad focused. What is the big plan in terms of graduate student space? Is it to move it more in the direction of the Big Red Barn and sort of work on those programs? Or so what is sort of the big plan?
Let me take a crack at this, and I may call upon Ken Hubble, who's the owner and keeper and lover of Willard Space. I might first just challenge a little bit of the assumption leading into the question. The question is a very valid question. But the closing of the ceramic studio was in large measure because the demand we saw was frankly not worthy of the size of the space that occurred. So True, for the individual graduate students or community members, which were a large share of the recording undergraduates, I recognize that the law is a very special space. But the space that was created, the garden room, is a university space. It's not an undergraduate space. It's not a staff space. It's not a graduate space. It's available for any and all of you. So it lacks a particular function, like the ceramic studio. But you know, certainly if you or your organizations are looking for space to schedule, you know, this is now a wonderfully renovated space that is as accessible to you guys for a function as it is to any of the graduates. The very den, in my dream, I would hope it would be viewed as a university resource. I acknowledge that it tends to have an undergraduate focus, in part because we're now going to be providing the opportunity to serve alcohol in that setting. Just as you can serve alcohol on Fridays in the Big Red, in the barn. But again, to the extent that a whole bunch of graduate students decide to go down there on the night of Bears Den is open for whatever programming you want to put on, it's there for you as well. It is not an undergraduate focus. It would probably need to see some shifting of student leadership of the student union board, which is right now heavily skewed to the undergraduate. So I guess just the little pushback on that a little bit is there's no question the straight tends to be viewed as heavily undergraduate, the more undergrad than grad. But I really challenge you guys to look at that as your resource as well. And to the extent you vote with your feet, the extent it will be more graduate focused. That said, the long-term issue that remains, this was a major focus of the first GCI, I fully expect them to come out of the GCI, what is the long-term vision for a graduate community center? And, I think in all honesty, in the near term, that remains an open question. The vision of the master plan had it further out on campus, or the vision of the campus would be growing fairly substantially to the east. I don't think we'll see that growth in the same pace that the master plan anticipated. So it does beg the question of how long can we keep the barn alive and well and functioning? How can we make sure spaces like the Strait, as we renovate those, get fully utilized by the graduate professional community as well? Because we're not going to have the luxury of duplicating some of those spaces in the near term. Kansas,
is there anything you would add?
Well, I don't
want to
be a worse point, but I'd like to think that is really for all students. The third of students who are graduate students would think of Strait as a place they would enjoy as well. And, a place where you can interact with undergraduates, and you have an awful lot of time to talk to undergraduates. So I look forward to any days when you and your friends are interact with your junior colleagues. As far as the Bears Den is concerned, it's growing slowly. As of the beginning of next semester, we plan to have not just the stage, but lights and sound, so it will be more a venue that can support various types of entertainment. And the concert committee is all queued up to put the small musical ensembles in there of all different sorts. And Joe Sakita, who's one of our assistant deans of the students, the student activities, is working on the time that right now. If you want to be involved, I think you'd be welcome to do so. And I think that the Bears Den could be available for graduate students in whatever way you believe that that's appropriate. And like Susan said, I urge you to get involved in the student union board and represent yourselves aggressively, assertively, in their meetings that occur every Wednesday evening about 5:30.
Thanks. I want to take a moment here and open it up for questions from the floor. So what we've done is you all probably saw or maybe didn't see my email for call for questions. And we send David and Susan this question beforehand so they can prepare and not have an answer that is, we'll look into it and get back to you. But that being said, we do want to make sure that everyone here, and then folks in the audience too, if you have questions, feel free to ask them. So does anyone have any questions from the floor? Yeah, Bill, please.
I apologize everyone for asking this question.
Good start.
What is the administration feeling about COVID and what's going on with COVID? I know we're extended here and we're kind of trying to figure out how the administration feels about
You notice as soon as someone passes their concert or their interview, they start to ask questions.
He feels powerful with his suit on.
I think we look at Book Day as an interview celebration for all students. It's one that has a long, long history. The term iteration of interviews now about 20 years, but we'll have all the way to 1990. Some version of end of semester celebration. In the years that Dean Hubble and I have worked together, we have worked a lot with students to try to have the events themselves be much safer than it was in my first year as vice president. And we received the call from the hospital and get people in and we'll be here by the way we're doing the poll. So a lot of our focus has been, if you're going to have an event, which I have to think at the end of the semester can be a fun thing to do. I would prefer to be the day after Class A classes, but I don't think I can fight that in my lifetime. That our first focus has been to have that event be a safe one. Second is that much of the responsibility for what happens rests on the students. We are in a constant dialogue with them about how they could get. And I think, and here I'll speak more for myself than anybody else, I think we're about at our upper limit. And, you know, the undergraduates have voted aggressively the last couple of years to pass themselves to make it even bigger and better. There's some logic to the more exciting entertainment, the more likely they are to stay on the slope and it's safer on the slope than it is elsewhere. But there's a huge secondary cost for the bigger it gets. So if we were at the undergraduate student assembly, we would say, you know, enough is enough. The battle, or the contention that's been going on between the graduate and the undergraduate, because of what the pair share, is something that I frankly would prefer not to get in the middle of. I think that's a student issue. And you know, we can cajole and advise, but I think ultimately that's a student issue. And again, I think people will need to vote with their feet.
Are there other questions from the floor? Yeah, Yevgeny?
I'm just getting there. The GCLC Advocacy Committee hosted a town hall a couple of weeks ago for grad students. And one of the main issues that came up is we need to improve the sense of community on campus for graduate students across the departments and the schools. And I was wondering what your vision is for community for graduate students, and also what do you think is the best way to improve that sense?
It's much, much bigger challenge than an undergraduate or even professional education because by definition, a graduate student becomes more isolated than a graduate depending on how the discipline is, it's the layout or the library or the class office or the business or sort of in the real world. Obviously, as Dr. Murphy was saying, and as Dr. Hull, taking advantage of some physical space on campus is really important because it's already come together across disciplines, just because of the commonality of graduate student experience. And because of the realities of the fiscal situation, which I hate to sound like I'm hanging behind, but one specific thing was I decided that we had to stop taking more debt. And so some of the capital projects, construction projects that would have been funded by some of the tax exempt bonds, required that we're just not doing anything. So that means we have to think about what spaces are available right now. If the graduates and professional students agree that that's one way we can rebuild. A second way is to think about this shared governance. This obviously involves planning for action by definition of the population. But I think it's important that assume that one way to build community on some issues like issues of public love, asking career families or other issues, is that you go back and talk to graduate professional students in your discipline or some other area. One thing that I've always thought was important for all the different places that I've worked is for the shared governance and discussions not to only be at the central level. And that's up to you and I, to me, how to work that. But in other words, if there's some issue that I'm not sure what college or university has, okay. So let's say an art society is a very technical because it's so incredibly comprehensive and diverse. But even then, if there were some an issue that was discipline specific or broader than just their own experience. Having some way to make students feel that their voices are being heard, this group of seven faculty and undergraduate students as well, that through you, they have some way of interacting. And depending on the issue, sometimes in crisis, but sometimes without a crisis, having an individual town hall meeting or something where we can all discuss an issue that's a common concern. But I think a lot of it comes down, at least thinking back a thousand years to when I was in this seat, which I never was, I never really considered winning in front of the starting president. I stop chewing to answer this question. I think the social scene is very, very important. Having some place to be compressed and be there, especially if you feel so isolated. So I think those are a few ways that it can be done. I think it's very important to take the time to do this kind of thing because I think it's important. And by definition, because of the way the GPSA is set up, people from different disciplines have a chance to hear their issues. Some issues are going to be very common, the issue that's brought up by NIAC and careers, especially master's degrees, but some are going to be very, very specialized, like laboratory or digital humanities or what about job prospects and non specialist things like that. Those are some thoughts that I think.
That's great. So I want to go back to our questions that have been posed. Monet, you had a question about the tech campus, and I want to preface your question by letting you know that on the later part of our agenda, we have a resolution to amend our charter to include a field representative from tech campus and from Geneva as an official component of GPSA. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think it's I mean, it's even effective in thinking about just a quick few comments. It was the last of the meeting before that that we talked about.
The last one.
Did I connect you with Ian Huttmacher?
He did. Yep.
Did you have a chance to talk to him?
We did, okay, and so that's what's come out of it.
And Geneva is a place that is easy to not remember for some of these discussions, so I'm so grateful that you're doing that because it's another kind of graduate experience.
Yeah.
Anyway, please.
Yeah.
Hello, Monday, Ma. So Cornell was recently selected to start a tech campus in New York City. Can you talk about how that initiative plays into the university's overall strategy? And also, how will graduate students be involved with this role in their
campus? Yeah, it's really, really important. I know during the proposal process a year and a half ago, something like that, that the provost, maybe Dan Huttmacher, but I know the provost involved some discussions with grad students at the graduate-only campus. And so there was some relevance and involvement in sort of listening mode to what graduate students had. Now that the thing is becoming a reality, and the first matriculum and master's in the program that started in January, a handful of students, I'm not even sure the number, but it was a small number. I think there's really two aspects of the connection between the mothership and this campus. One is the students who are actually on the campus. And I'm assuming that that's what Mitch and Dean Huttmacher are talking about, because you all will also represent those grad students, like any graduate professional students, everywhere except, I guess, the College of Medicine, you will directly represent
correct.
Them, although we have them with us in the student here phone calls. So one aspect will be, in whatever way you see fit, to bring the voices of those students on that campus, even if it's a literal handful of students starting in January. My hope that I shared with Mitch and Dan Huttmacher was that we would start off right away setting the precedent that they're represented by GPSA. Then the other issue will be from the opposite perspective, from your perspective, how do you see that particular development? In the beginning, it's such a de minimis number of students that it may be easy not to think about it too much except in big conceptual terms. But I think because there'll be a master's of engineering class coming in, and then in the not too distant future, dual degree, technion and other kinds of degrees, and of course PhDs, I think it'd be great for you to have some interaction here. And I'm big today in telling you who you should invite besides Dr. Murphy, Dr. Hubble. Besides Dr. Fox, I think you could consider where you might want to have Huttmacher come and talk. So he's the founding dean of the campus. You know, he was the dean of the faculty of computer information science, I told you, just a few months ago. And it might be good from both perspectives to see what he has to say, both the work that he and Mitch are doing, but to make sure that those students understand we start on that campus in January, because there is such a thing as the GPSA. And some of those students, for all I know, maybe Cornell students who go there, I just don't know, not involved in the selection admissions process. And then the other perspective is, from the point of view of the kind of issues, the community issues do raise, this is a tough one, right? Because that can get to be a very isolated kind of community. It'd be great for them to feel, even 237 miles away, that they're part of a bigger group. And I would say that that comment is generalizable to all my thoughts about the campus, that the faculty and the students who are there will have to work hard to make sure that they feel that they're part of the whole. It's also true over the years and decades, even in College of Medicine, which has been part of Cornell for a century, it's easy for them to feel, you know, somewhat autonomous and isolated because they've been so far away geographically. Especially in your generation, being much more conversant in technology, I hope that you'll consider, you know, Skype or video conference or those kind of things, and maybe even have a representative from the first class or master's students or whatever you want to offer yourself. It's really important.
David, I might also just add that in those areas, it relates a little bit to the first question that you asked, what is the new direction around graduate education? And I think, you know, what I observed about the New York campus is that in certain departments, somewhat in response to the mayor, but also from the point of view of the faculty in those departments that are leading this initiative, was a recognition that to truly excel, we needed to have access to an urban environment. And there's enormous strength that we have here in Ithaca, but there are some limitations, not least of which we need to also hire, but also just some limitations. So I think those of you that are from the disciplines that are going to be the initial or the inaugural areas of study also have a real opportunity, you know, working with your faculty, working through your department administrators to try to connect with those students, because that's going to be at least an initial natural conversation. You're studying computer science here in Ithaca. I'm doing it in the tech campus. What's different? What's the same? What can we do with it for one another? And that will play out in the Johnson School when they roll out their EMBA. So it seems to me that in addition to the overall campus, and how do we want to think about the overall campus, these GPSA, for those of you that are in the disciplines where this is going to, you know, this is the mothership will be the disciplines here. And that's, you know, one of these new directions that these those disciplines have decided we need to be thinking.
Thanks. Evan, you had a question about the budget.
So, at the risk of asking a fairly broad and complicated question, I'll ask it anyway. So, a few years ago, there was some financial events sometime that uncovered a structural budget deficit. One of the responses to that is to develop a new budget model that repositions costs and income in various different ways. So as to, among other things, make units more accountable for their expenses and to make it more clear where their income is coming from. I wonder, I don't have a specific question because the budget model hasn't been rolled out, but I wonder if I might ask generally what kind of effect you might see this having on graduate professional students. Could be no effect, could be totally transparent, or it might end up maybe even seriously reconfiguring what kind of incentive exists around, say, scholarships or assistantships or what have you.
It's a really important question. The general view of the state of the budget model brought to you is that it's a hybrid of so-called responsibility-centered budget, where the individual units are responsible for making equilibrium between revenues and expenditures at the unit level. The unit could be a college, could be a vice presidential unit, or the president's office, whatever that means to be. If that was strictly that way, all of the funds would go to and be used by the local unit. I call it hybrid because there's also an element where there's a certain levy against all units so that the provost, the budget officer at the campus, has the ability to make strategic investments in a variety of things. And I think the way that budget model will affect all units is how that balances out in a particular unit or discipline. So you can imagine that the discipline that has access to outside funds, like the STEM discipline where people can apply to the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health for funding, has one set of potentials compared to the U.S. where the country has decided not to invest like the National Technology Communities in the same way. Beyond that, I think it's too early to know exactly what the effect will be. I emphasize again the risk of redundancy that this too would be another good thing to have focus on and talk about. My prediction is that I'll be able to tell you in general terms and also in more specific terms about the mechanisms of it, but that because of the nature of granting professional education, there won't be one answer that will affect all students in the post-baccalaureate discipline. Is that fair to think?
I do, and I think that the incentive system that exists for professional masters and the incentive system that exists for the academic masters and PhD are very, very different.
Yeah.
So we would certainly see already in college engineering sort of the incentive of sort of the revenue stream that comes into the college because of the demand for that professional masters. But I think, I think it's a vitally important question because we are, after all, a research university, and part of our mission is to train the academic leaders of tomorrow as well as those who need advanced education to do whatever their professional careers are. And to me, it would be sort of these first questions to ask the provost because, as one who is very committed to graduate experience, but it also repeated that, as you properly said, needing a very different model so we can see both where the revenues and expenses align, and then also how to make sure that we don't lose sight of some of the critical, overarching strategic needs that the institutions are investing. So, for example, at the undergraduate level, our commitment to needs-based aid and needs-aligned admissions is being managed in such a way that even though each college is getting its revenue and has to pay a financial aid bill, there is a leveling across all of the seven colleges, so you're not having disincentives to admit people, more people who can pay solve your financial problem. That's not going to be allowed. But the same issue becomes how do we make sure there's enough funding across the, I'm going to say, the PhD level to ensure appropriate investment in the academic system.
And in career services and placement and so on. One thing for sure that I need to do with evidence being a hybrid and strictly decentralized thing is that the, not just this particular provost, but in general, there won't be any retreat from the idea that there's certain principles that the reason you came to Cornell is investment faculty facilities are very good, so outstanding depending on the area that you're talking about. The fact that the graduate and professional education, especially in the departmental sense, graduate education is an unbelievably important part, not just because, as Tim also said, a third of the students, but because that's what makes us different than management of the UR's college or some other kind of institution. So I'll mention, I'm getting writer's cramp from all these questions, but I'll mention some specifics that just came up in one way or the other, whatever you choose to. This is your last meeting this term, is that right?
Correct.
But I'm sure whenever, only you, Dr. Fox, and the other folks involved in this is an important question.
That's great. And I want to ask one more question. Yeah, I'm going to steal it from, it's a good question that Rob posed, but I'm going to steal it. That Rob posed, who you heard from earlier.
You're going to claim credit for
it? I'm not claiming credit for it. I'm just going to steal it and give it due credit. But what would both of you like your legacy to be as president and vice president of student and academic services for the university?
Sure.
I don't know if we sent this to you before.
If I choose one single thing, it would be student access. That's been the biggest thrust for me, both by graduate professional student access, because my own experience as a first generation college student, how it changed my life. So that would be the one thing.
And I don't have one thing. I've spent my career in two parts of the university. The first half in admissions and financial aid, so I would have echoed David's about student access. But more than the second half of my career, I've been in the student experience on the campus. So I would say I hope my legacy would be that my colleagues and I have made a difference in the quality of the experience our students had while they were here. We not only were able to get them here and keep them here financially, but the quality of quality of experience beyond the formality of the classroom instruction, which is the core of why you're here, but that the quality of experience would be important.
Could I take a prerogative and just two parting comments, one serious and one serious but a little bit humorous, hopefully. I just got back from another visit to India. We had an alumni event in Mumbai with 200 people, beautiful turnout. And it reminded me, and I knew that I was going to see you all, which is I tell you about the enormous ties that graduate professional student alumni of Cornell have all over the world. This is a fantastic turnout, and because of the fact that international students tend to be more in graduate professional ranks, although we have a lot of undergraduates as well, it was a fantastic experience. This is a couple hundred people turn out in one city. It was amazing. The other thing I'll just take the prerogative of forgiveness is because of our colleagues, our relaxed colleagues, that's about smoking. I just want to share a vignette. So when I first before I was in the president, I got this great opportunity. I came to take a tour of the campus. And three undergraduate tour guides all got together to give me a tour. It was like a big honor to be in the president room. And I'm walking me around, all of them walking backwards and whatever. And we got to Live Slope. And they said, you know, we have this thing every year called Slope Day, and sort of explaining to me what the deal was. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Do you have entertainment? And they said, oh, yeah, well, fabulous entertainment, you know. And I said, well, who do you have recently? This was 06. And they said, we have Snoop Dogg last year. And I knew who Snoop Dogg was. I don't even know. Because I had a kid who was just graduating from college, so I would have, like, no idea. But so I said, well, you know, that's sort of a coincidence. Just very innocently, I said to the student tour guide, I said, I'm sort of a musician, and I can see it now. You know, Snoop Dogg and Sporty together at last. And there was this long, very uncomfortable pause. And she said, you know, with all due respect, the students pick the entertainment. So that's the day that I knew what Cornell students were like. So thanks a lot. Appreciate
that's
everything,
great.
President. I hope you have a good end of the term and get a chance to kick back and make another break. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, we're still going. I push them hard. Well, thank you both for joining us. And if any people have further questions, please send them to me, and I'll pass them along to both Susan and David, and that we can try to respond to them in time. So, yeah, thank you. All right, moving on to the more mundane parts of GPSA, but still important. First want to go to executive committee report. And I first want to ask Eric and Nicole, do you have anything else other than our main topic? Any committees you need filled?
No. Well, other than what I showed a few weeks ago, we still have some openings. If you're interested, please let me know. And thank you to everyone who got back to me about volunteering for the academic integrity the hearing that is coming up. So if that happens again, I'll be sure to get back to you about that. And thanks again for everyone who got back so quickly this weekend.
Thanks. I first want to give a brief overview of the GCI and where we are with the ad hoc committee. That's been meeting about every other week, and we've really focused in on doing a review of the 2007 GCI and focusing in on these eight topic areas. So these were the eight topic areas that generally comprised the majority of the GCI from 2007. And so this Graduate Community Center, Career Resources, and Sense of Community, about which we've already heard quite a bit, were the core three pieces of the GCI from 2007, the open hearts, open doors, open minds. They focus on these three issues here at top. And for this GCI, we want to make sure that those are covered. A lot of the the asks and recommendations will likely be similar. But we've gone through and really analyzed what was asked before, what was discussed, how the GCI looked at each issue, and really trying to figure out how we can move forward. And we've also been focusing on what in the 2007 GCI was called the chronics, transportation, housing, diversity, international students, mental and physical health, and family services. So we've been having, you guys have all participated in our transportation and our housing discussions in GPSA. Thank you again for participating. And so we've been, again, meeting as a GCI ad hoc committee, and we've also had a couple outreach events. Yevgeny mentioned the town hall, which Nico gave us a report on at our first meeting in January. We had the town hall that focused on some of these aspects of the GCI. We're having an event tomorrow night at Hasbrook to talk about family services and what kind of aspects of the GCI we could strengthen or add or change with regard to family services. And so we've been having a kind of a dialogue and campus discussion about these eight topic areas. But we definitely still need people to get involved. We have a core group of about 10 students, both from this group and from outside, who have been meeting with us regularly. But this is really going to be our topic. This is, I think, going to be the lasting legacy, to answer a question that I posed to David and Susan, of this year's GPSA. We're going to pass hopefully a really good GCI at the end of the year, but we want to make sure that everyone has a chance to get involved and to say their piece about this. This is going to drive the future of how the administration works with the graduate community and how they prioritize their investments, whether it's monetarily or staff time. This is, you know, Kent, correct me, Kent or Tillman, as people from higher ups, if you will, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is kind of how things are going to move forward. And so it's really important that we get a broad input and broad involvement from graduate and professional students. So thank you to those who are involved, who have offered comments, but please let me know. My email is down there, and you get plenty of emails from me. Please do let me know if you want to get more involved, even if it's as simple as offering a comment that you might have about the 2007 GCI. I'll go ahead and send out the link to the document again. But again, just read it over. And even if you can't get involved and dedicate a lot of your time, look it over and give us some comments. Every way you can get involved in the process is good. But we do want people for the committee. more people to help us work on the topic areas and offer some advice as we move towards the end.
And writing.
Yeah, and writing. So our next steps, we're going to continue to get input from the graduate community, graduate and professional student community, and also we're making sure that nothing in the GCI is a surprise to the administration. So at every level we're working with them. You've heard from quite a few administrative level folks that we really haven't heard from before, from transportation and housing. So we want to make sure that the recommendations that we're pursuing, we talk with them about, and we make sure they're good ideas and they make sense. And also letting, you know, the high ups that joined us today know what we're talking about. And then lastly, we'll start to really write the topic area reports and compile the GCI next semester as well. And hopefully we'll have a full report or full draft report for the GPSA to look at and begin to approve for our first March meeting. Because our plan is to present this document at the March Board of Trustees meeting, which are at the very end of March. So we want to make sure that we have a fully compiled and passed by the GPSA document by then. So please let me know if you want to get involved. There it is, like always. Yeah, and then the other thing we want to talk about, I don't know if Nicole, if you want to jump in, but or you want me to just keep talking?
We'll go until I feel like I...
Okay. So Nicole and Eric and I took some time last week or whenever it was to really reflect on how things have been going in the GPSA this semester so far. And, you know, one of the things we've noticed and noticed and tried hard to change is the fact that most of the resolutions we've had have really been written by the three of us, or I know Evan's added his name here and there, but I think Evan will forever add his name to resolutions, but it's great. We appreciate it. Yeah. And so we really do want, you know, I know resolutions look kind of intimidating and the whereas clauses and all the line numbers and the way they're written is a little intimidating and frankly not really, I mean, until you know how to read them, they're not particularly interesting documents. But they are the way we do business, and it's not likely to change. And so we want to encourage the members, if you have a topic of interest, whether it's any of these DCI topics, whether it's any issue that pertains to a broader graduate professional student issue, we really want to have some resolutions by other members. It can be a simple policy statement. We don't typically do policy statements. Or, you know, the student assembly often will do a policy statement. They'll write a resolution that states the student assembly's support for a particular topic or a particular issue. And we don't tend to do that, but there's nothing preventing us from doing it. And we can certainly have a dialogue in the group about it. But we really want people to feel comfortable offering those resolutions. And then also during the resolutions, we really haven't had much discussion. There have been some amendments to fix wording, and those are very much appreciated. Don't ever feel like you're wasting time. Please don't feel like you're wasting time by offering them. We should do a better job of proofreading beforehand, but that's we'll do that. But you know, we want to make sure that people feel like the discussion is valuable and that we're not wasting time. I know we sometimes leave resolutions till the very end, and we're pushing past 7 o'clock and we all want to go home or miss the hurricane, whatever it is. But, you know, we do want to make sure that people feel that they can have a discussion. So I know we have a couple resolutions today, one on sending a message, if you will, a policy statement really, about higher education funding to Congress and supporting some graduate students going down to Washington, and another resolution that changes our charter somewhat significantly to include a field representative from, we'll talk about this later, from Geneva and Cornell Tech. And so if there's discussion, if you feel particularly strongly or just want to say, I think it's a good idea, you know, let's pass the resolution, that's all very much welcomed. We want to make sure that there's enough time for people to you know, have a serious discussion. You know, we're not having discussions about Slope Day, which from my experience last year generated a lot of discussion, and minus Bill's comment, we haven't talked about it much. But thank you anyway. So I know that we haven't had too many controversial issues, but again, we just want to make sure that people feel like they can offer ideas and offer resolutions and offer discussion. I don't know, if anyone has a perspective on it now, we definitely welcome it. I don't know if
well, I was just going to add.
Yeah, please, Nicole.
Yeah, just as the, I guess, somehow a sage elder in this, and having written a ton of resolutions, I mean, it has not historically been the case that everything in the GPSA has been uncontroversial or not discussed. I realize that's sort of been a trend this year, but it really hasn't always been the case. So you should feel free, if you disagree with the substance of a resolution or a line, I mean, feel free to discuss that, offer an amendment, and, you know, you should feel comfortable, you know, voting however you want to vote on that resolution. And also, I'm happy to offer my services to anyone who would like resolution writing help. I've done this a number of times now, and I think I got it down pretty well. I was in the inexperienced camp for a while, but I'm happy to offer my services. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Does anyone have any comments now to facilitate any discussion that might be... Okay, and if you have questions or comments offline, send Nicole or I an email. But thank you, Bill. Do you have a report from appropriations?
How many people here don't have a bus pass? How many people here would buy a bus pass if it was a quarter of the cost. Would it change with my cost or not?
If you have one, can you still say yes?
That's why I get a kind of rough deal. I'm sure we talked about the education here the last meeting, and we talked about what if buses were by right funded through, and if we get a free bus pass, which essentially people would be free, but it'd be $50 in person, and trying to see if there'd be support for that or not, it's something worth pursuing. So, if you think that's something worth pursuing, let me know. And if you think it's a horrible idea, let me know. And, let people's feedback before we start to go. Anyway, yeah.
You know what the amount of the activity group would be for maybe?
It would have to go up $50.
$50 on the activity fee?
Well, they didn't get to discuss a lot of the details for how much it would be based on the usage of the bus passes right now and what they're getting in revenue. And then we could be used to try to account for increased usage due to more access to the bus passes. It would be conceivable that maybe $50 a year for a bus pass for all graduate students, if all graduate students paid into an activity basis. So, they had interest in it rather than the increased ridership. And if you think that's something that I should pursue, or if you're just pursuing yourself, let me know. And if you think it's really bad, let me know.
Great. Thanks, Bill. Eric.
So just to clarify, everyone would pay $50, and it would be free after that $50 on top of the... Okay.
So, it's kind of the system now. You pay a lot if you want to get it, or everybody gets it at a discount. That's kind of the pros and cons of both sides of it. Something to consider.
And to provide context, Bill and the Appropriations Committee look at the activity fee. That's all going to be set next year in GPSA, so get involved. But this is kind of part of what Bill has been thinking about, just how the activity fee is set next year.
Yeah,
provide some context.
Yeah.
And
if you're interested in this, let me know. I need more people on my committee, so talk to me or talk to Eric if you get that committee. So thanks a lot, have a great break, everybody.
Thanks, Bill. I know Marcus didn't have a communications report. Vinay, do you have anything?
We're going to have the last SB meeting of the semester, September 6th. So if you need more to submit any funding requests, please do so before this Friday at 4 o'clock. If you miss the deadline, then we're going to be only able to review it next semester in February. So you'll have December and January to submit your request. So if you get it in before this Friday, then we can consider it our meeting next week.
Thanks. Kristen and or Giovanna, I know you guys have a couple slides, but...
So we have on Wednesday Feed Frenzy. We have a lot of games planned for Feed Farm, or tell people to come. Talking about sense of community. We're trying to make people feel less uncomfortable, because I know it's really weird to say I'm gonna go meet people randomly, but we're trying to make it as smooth as possible and fun for everybody. So please. I know we're all filled with incentives, so we tell people, because word of mouth is the most important way of letting people know. And we can't reach, I don't know, you know how many people are there?
No, I'm sure we don't have to.
Yeah, so please let people know, it's going to be really fun. And we have Zumba free for all grad students on Saturday, so people that don't have team memberships, it is something fun, so please, I encourage you to come. If you don't know what Zumba is, it's like dancing, and it's very fun.
Great, thanks. Evgeny, do you have anything?
So, Ms. mentioned that we had a town hall 2 weeks ago, some of you attended. I think it was a really great event. We'll have a report, hopefully, the first meeting of the upcoming year, and we already have outlined some really good action items that you have a communication, so I think it's going to be a really good report, and definitely a resolution.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, I'll announce it's going to be one of the meetings. If you're so interested in joining the Student Access Committee, which will do a lot of work, I'll send an email about it.
Great, thanks. Craig?
So, I wanted to thank you for letting me start meeting at the coming chair of the faculty award committee to recognize excellence in the teaching and how long the name dragged on this year. And we could sharpen the teachers who made it award committee, but
Just for usable purposes.
So just to give you a sense, like an overview of what we really achieved last year. The biggest thing that we achieved was the criteria. So in order to give an award, you need to know why you need to make it, qualify the criteria so that you can compare between people. And the criteria is pretty long, and you will get a copy of it once when you send it out. Lower for nominations, but it includes sentences like when a faculty has actually gone above and beyond to provide students with guidance regarding time management, the productivity, and everything else. So we try to make the award nominations as comprehensive as possible. So hopefully, by making the presentation, I'm trying to encourage you to go back to the field when you get email and other assistance for nominations to encourage more people to nominate. And I would like to take the opportunity to thank Nicole, Brian, Evan, Nathal, and Rebecca for last year's contributions to the company. It was really great to work with all of you. And we got decent publicity from Colonel Chronicle. I think Jennifer also covered us. No. I think they sent us requests. I've never heard back from them, but I do remember them asking me questions about the event. But I don't know if it got time to publish. But those were the winners last year. Professor Cohen, Professor Smart, and Mr. Nagul from the law. And just to give you a brief timeline for what we're going to do next year. At first, we're going to start with probably getting a few more members in the committee. We have to meet ourselves first, and then we'll let everybody know how we are going to start the committee. By March, I think we are going to invite nominations, and I would like to hear what your ideas are on newer ways to have status. We'd really like you guys to spend some time to actually acknowledge the contribution of the faculty leaders. And then in around April, we review the nominations and select that discussion will obviously depend on how many nominations we get. Last year we got 25 nominations, which was about 100 pages of nominations, but I think it took about 2 to 3 hours for five of us to go through all of it, which is pretty fun. And then around May, we'll have a termination gift award, and I think we've already been promised about $1,500 by the graduate school. So we're not going to ask for funding from the GPSA project. Maybe we might get more, but that's something else. But yeah, that's basically the report. And please let me know if you have any questions or comments.
Great, thanks, Brad. Yeah, welcome to the committee reports. great, now we'll move on to the approval of the minutes. Y'all should have received the November 12th minutes. Still on Friday, last Friday, Nicole generously gave her time over break to give you all the minutes, even on Friday. So are there any changes or amendments to the minutes? Evan, please.
I just want to note that there are no voting members listed as either present or absent.
I think that was my fault. I don't think I actually went through that. I'll make... Yeah, we'll put those in. Thanks, Evan.
I did not take the time to look over the minutes before I sent them out.
All right. We will add that in to make record of all of the voting members who are present. Any other changes? Fantastic. Any opposition to approving the minutes? As will be amended. Great. Thanks. Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Fantastic. Now we'll move on to new business. We have two resolutions today that I alluded to a little bit earlier. This first one is one that I wrote on behalf of a group of 5 graduate students that are heading down to Washington at the end of this week to meet with some congressmen. So Resolution 11, essentially, it's a longer resolution, basically sets out some of the context for how the federal government interacts with Cornell University in terms of the amount of money that they give the institution. And why this is important, this is a breakdown of, and this is not collected by me, this is collected by the Government Relations Office. This breakdown is important because the Budget Control Act, which was passed in 2011, Congress put into place some automatic spending caps on various federal programs, and if by the end of this year, by December 31st, a budget is not approved by the Congress, then automatic cuts happen at 8.2% to non-defense spending and 9.4% for defense spending across the board. And that's to every agency for every bit of money. There are a few exceptions. One of those I know is Pell Grants. But with few exceptions, it's this automatic cut across the board. And so basically what that means is that there's a concern that those cuts will trickle down into cuts to higher education, cuts to this amount of money that is given to Cornell. And graduate students and graduate and professional students do rely on this money for our education and for the research that we participate in and that we do ourselves. So there's going to be significant cuts. I didn't put in this slide, but generally the Government Relations Office looks at just what an 8.2% cut would be to each of these. If people do have questions, I can certainly answer any specifics on here, but this is generally will happen. So for graduate students, the loan pool will be cut a bit. And so if there's a cut to this, it means fewer loans for the master's programs that take on loans, myself included. I have a lot of them. The research that we do, the research that NSF funds, that NIH funds, even the more broader programs like the synchrotron, which I don't know much about but I'm learning about, is funded by NSF. And I'm not sure where the cuts would come for that, but the federal government supports a lot of what makes graduate education really meaningful. And also to maybe a lesser but still an important degree, Cornell Cooperative Extension will face some cuts. And I know that Nighthawk, for instance, does some research and some work with Extension. I'm sure others in the room do too, and that will definitely be affected. So basically, this resolution is just a policy document. It says that we'll interact with our Congress members, these five listed here and two senators, and basically gives the five members who are listed here a chance to have something to we're going to go down at the end of this week anyways, but this resolution gives us a platform to stand on and to say the GPSA, which represents all graduate and professional students here, believes that federal funding for higher education is really important. Not necessarily that they need to give up other things than budget. We're not saying that. We're just saying that it's important and that our stories are, we're going to tell each of our stories to the senators and congresspeople that what we're doing is important and it's important for the country as a whole. So that's what this resolution does, and that's what we are going to go down to Washington to do. So are there any, I do know there was one suggested amendment by Adrian, I believe, and that I made. So there was a change in this particular whereas clause to just adjust the wording. Adrian, thank you for your suggestions, and then to add the word "the" down here. So is there by way of starting the discussion on this resolution, is there any opposition to making these small changes? Fantastic. We'll consider it amended. Is there any other discussion or amendments on this resolution? Evan?
I want to take advantage of an opening that President Scorton left in recent remarks. He said something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing, this country has decided not to fund, among other things, humanities. I did some quick math just now. The combined budget of the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the National Endowment for the Humanities, is roughly 0.8 8% of the combined budget of the NSF and the NIH. Now, I'm not suggesting that, I don't know, that research is important, don't get me wrong, but one thing that Congress often looks at is right for cuts, even though we're talking about $1 trillion budget deficits and $16 trillion debt, is immediately $300 million that goes combined to the NEA and the NEH. Don Randall put it, that's less than the cost of one F-22 fighter jet, which until recently was a fighter jet the military didn't even want. I wanted to suggest maybe it's appropriate in this resolution, maybe I should get on my soapbox in another resolution. if we're calling on Congress to do something, then perhaps we might include calling on them to, at the very least, maintain the funding that is given to the arts and the humanities, some of which does in fact benefit higher education, but very little of which does because they have so little money. They basically stopped giving the kinds of grants that the NIH and the NSF give to higher ed because they can't afford it. So at the very least, maintain the small budget that they do have, and even better, perhaps increase the budget. To give you a totally unfair comparison, but it's the best I can do off the top of my head. In Canada, there's an organization called the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council, which is in some ways comparable to the NEH, in other ways not. Their budget is 20 times per capita what the NEH budget is, 20 times per capita, which means that the budget is, given that Canada has run 10 to many people, it means that in real dollars, it's already twice the size. And there are 30 million people in Canada and 300 million people here. So I would call on you and the GPSA and maybe myself, when you're talking to Congress, and when we're all talking to our Congress people, and for that matter, when you're voting, to keep in mind funding for the arts and humanities in this country. Thank you very much.
Yeah, please.
Well, I wanted to piggyback on that comment, and I think I'll be able to finish because I'm not studying any more of that. But that substance, it's not really part of this resolution, but I'm taking the time anyway, to take some of the figures you put up earlier, mm-hmm. and some of the figures that Evan wants to put in his soapbox, mm-hmm. and some of the figures that might not be in either place, to distribute to us, to distribute to our friends and family. Because those of us who don't live in New York and have different conference people to talk to, or have just other friends and family in other places, that some of the information here is great, but some of it isn't. If I put this on Facebook, it wouldn't attract any attention at all. If I said, hey, sequestration happens, X number of Cornell students' research will be canceled. Or Y number of people will no longer be able to afford going to Cornell. And that's just at my university, and think about all the other universities. Figures like that and data like that, I think, is really powerful. Mm-hmm. And not only is it useful for when you guys go down to Washington, and I applaud you for doing so, but also for those of us who aren't going, there's no reason that we should be silent on the issue and not be able to use social media and word of mouth to sort of get that word out. So if you have that data, I would love it if there were a way to sort of help us get that data out there.
Yeah, we'll
there,
be sure
there
to
is that. One right away that we can tell you about, which is through the National Association of Graduate and Professional Students, created a avoidingthefiscalcliff.org, is that correct? And I posted it on the Facebook page for the GPSA, and that sort of specifically addresses how the fiscal cliff affects graduate students, but we can try to put something Cornell specific, mm-hmm. but that one, I mean, if you want to look at it right away, I already posted it. According to the stats, 257 people have seen it, but that's not that many. So, yeah.
I Googled it and I saw a document that had a state by state breakdown as far as how much money each state was going to lose, but that doesn't distinguish between graduate school, undergraduate, elementary, middle school, high school, special ed programs. And those are all getting, affected too. But for us as graduate and professional students, we specifically, I think, we wanted to be talking about that issue as it hits home.
Liz, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I just wanted to echo that that sounds like a really great idea. But in lobbying for in Congress, based on my experience of both working for Congress and nonprofit in the D.C. area, if you actually want to help this effort,
it actually calls Congress people, and maybe we can send out something at the GPSA bus with a phone number for people to call and specifics. Because whatever you can provide them, the senators and the representatives that you're going to be visiting, in concrete numbers so they can add to a memo somewhere, that legislative aid will love you even more for it. And insofar as like making a presence, one of the things that happened with that little thing about healthcare a couple years back is that opponents of the healthcare bill really called their Congress people. And that was what made the difference, not necessarily email or social media, unfortunately. And I'm a tech geek, so.
Okay.
So I know it's tangentially related, but while we're on the topic.
Any other discussion on the resolution? Does anyone not like it? I would say that
I would just say probably take it one step further, it's just called a little statement for graduate students. You know, a little letter that they can make it the phone number and something to tell their number.
Sure.
I think the avoidthefiscalcliff.org set up by the NAGPS has that stuff structurally available. But we'll send it around so you guys can see it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll send it to the listserv. So look for an email from Nicole or I about that. Any other discussion on the resolution? Yeah, Matt?
I have a question.
Sure.
So in the results clause, are we going to send this to Congressman as well, sending the resolution? Do you think that would have any effect?
We'll send it as a letter, as kind of a follow-up to our meetings with them this week. Any other discussion? Great. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to a vote. All with green placards who are in favor of Resolution 11.
First point of order. Technically, you have to see if anyone objects to calling the question.
No?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then someone could have objected.
Okay.
From what I understand. Yeah. Okay. But thank you, though. I didn't bring my Robert's Rules book, so I'm without it.
Robert's Rules said that when discussion comes to an end, we can move to a vote. That would be a particular motion.
Okay. So moving to that vote, all those in favor, green placards of Resolution 11, please raise your green placards. Great. 16. All those opposed? Great. Resolution 11 passes 16-0. Great. Moving on to the next resolution of the day, Resolution 12. Nicole, I'll let you introduce that.
Yeah, so we've discussed this a little bit, and I should say we're not going to vote on this today. It's an amendment to the charter which requires one meeting that it's presented at and discussed initially, and then we'll actually vote at it at the first meeting on January 21st. So basically, as you may have inferred from the discussion there, President Swerton reached out to us and he sort of said, hey, we'd like you guys to figure out how students at the new Cornell Tech campus are going to be represented on the GPSA. And as you guys sort of know, like currently graduate students are represented through their fields. So graduate students at the Cornell Tech campus officially will be represented through the field, and the first set of students there will be in computer science. So officially they'd be represented through computer science. But I think, with our sort of satellite campuses, they face sort of different challenges and in ways that they may not be adequately represented through their field by a single individual in some cases. And this is true both for what we realized, both for Cornell NYC Tech as well as for the Geneva campus. And so with the Geneva campus, there's a little bit of a history, actually, of they've been very diligently sending representatives to the GPSA for several years now, and including in February 2010, a resolution very similar to this one failed in the GPSA, which called for a specific field representative position for students at the Geneva campus. And specifically, the biggest issue that this comes down to is its double representation, in a way, for students at these campuses. So creating this additional field representative position means that they're both represented via their field via their field, as well as having an additional representation. So that's kind of why this becomes a fairly substantive change to the charter and how we understand our membership as an organization. So the reason that we wrote this, though, I think is it comes down to that do students at these different campuses, you know, are their needs adequately represented on the GPSA, especially given that they're remote and they pay the activity fee, to merit another representation specifically dedicated to their campus and their campus needs. And I think the sort of later resolved clause also asks that sort of future GPSAs need to consider that as the number of students grow at NYC Tech, it'll only be a few in January, but it's going to keep growing. You know, is that an adequate, is this structure adequately representing those students? And then the final one, is basically calling upon all the institutions that sort of support student organizations and the distribution of the activity fee funds. Are they adequately set up to sort of, are they prepared to support student organizations at Tech campus in particular? So just sort of making sure that everyone knows that that's their task, and that's the resolution.
Matt Hawk, you had your hand up first.
Just to provide a little more time, the call has been covered as well, but the resolution back in February of 2010, I had the unfortunate experience of presiding over the meeting when the Geneva resolution fell down. It was really a horrible shame, I thought. And the Geneva Tech Camp didn't even fit in concept back then, but it was voted down because some people believed that there was a double representation issue, which, to put it in perspective, I think that's nonsense, because if you look at the organization of our body as it is, if you're from a field that has one student, and there are fields, there have been in the past, just like my 10 years, fields that have one student, up to fields of 99 students, you have one representative in this room. And so you might say there's some disparity in representation there, and if you have over 100, then you have two students in the field. The physical sciences has four representatives on the voting body when they have about 2,000 students, and biological and humanities have three students when they have 600 to 800 students. So to say, to make this out into one issue affecting the disparity of representation, I think is ill-placed, and I would be very supportive of being.
Great. I would also welcome a motion to extend the meeting by 10 minutes.
Motion to extend the meeting by 10 minutes.
Great, thanks. Is there a second? Okay, Giovanna seconds. Is there any opposition to that? Fantastic. Triveni, you are next on the speaker's list.
Yeah, I guess I'm not opposed to the whole implementation or stuff on the issue, but I'm wondering if having members come in from farther off campus makes sense, just, you know, structurally in terms of, like, are people going to come in from New York every 2 weeks to represent themselves? Are they going to come in from Geneva? I don't know if you have a question, I'm sorry. But, you know, are they going to come in from Geneva every time? Or does it make more sense to create a sort of, I don't know if you can stretch this possible, a bylaw where each of these campuses has their own mini GPSA that's under liaison? Or some sort of different kind of structure that gives them the power to communicate with their. Within their own administration, because presumably there's another set of administrations on these campuses. So maybe there should be a second GPSA as well.
If I can respond, so our thought, and it's still to be figured out the logistics of it, but we'll likely try to find a different meeting space that's better able to utilize Skype or some similar video conferencing technology to include them. We wouldn't want to burden them by having to make that trip at least every meeting. So that's one of the, if this resolution passes when we vote on it in January, this is one of the pieces that we'll discuss. And I also am going down to the orientation for the new students at Cornell Tech. And so I want to discuss that with them. We don't know who the new students are yet, but I want to discuss how they want to get involved. So I'll have an answer, a better answer to your question, I think, by the time we vote on it, if that helps. Giovanna, I think you were next on the speaker's list.
I have a question. It's almost long to me, but so the tracking will be solved. For example, in Geneva, I know that the first year students are mostly here. Maybe if they do something like that, a field representative from those first 2 years would be a good idea. But then I was also thinking, but they don't really know how things work in Geneva. So, yeah. I don't know if
everyone. Well, yeah, I was going to say, I'm a Geneva student, and I've been sort of their unofficial representative for a few years. And so, speaking to all of these things that everyone has said, I would very much be in support of this, obviously. We do, typically, students will live in Ithaca for their first 2 years as students, and then after that, quite a few will live in Geneva. And so, while they are still students, they're still paying that student activity fee, yet they don't have any technical representation, and, you know, I feel like we've all been through that a few centuries ago. But we have specific, unique situations surrounding that. We pay into the student activity fee, yet for those that are living there, and I'm living outside of Geneva, so I do make the trip down. But typically, we don't have access to a lot of the functions that get funded by our student activity fee. So in Geneva, we have horticulture, a large group of students from plant pathology, and from food science, and from entomology, which is my department. And so we sort of have our own collective group and organization where we put on, you know, certain activities in lieu of the activities that we might be able to experience down here. So it, I would very much support the passage of this resolution because of those issues. If anyone else has any other questions relating to the Geneva experience or, you know, an off-campus experience, please ask.
Thanks, Eric. I'm also going to enforce a 60-second time frame on answers in lieu of our time. Bill, thanks. Matt, you are next on the speaker's list.
I think much of you have already addressed a lot of my questions, but I think it would be good to establish what constitutes membership for these camps. I think at the Tech campus that's going to be more concrete, but at Geneva that may not be so concrete. There's people who take their courses here and then do research at Geneva. So we should have, I think, some sort of guideline of what constitutes Geneva representative for that reason.
Okay. Stephanie, you're next.
One, being from food science, we have a ton of people in Geneva, and I just want to echo what Eric said, that it's really just an experience for them than the experience that I have here in Ithaca from my degree. So I think that the patient is really important, especially at the DC, and the fact that I don't really think it's self-representation. As I said, their degree is phenomenally different from mine. And the only other thing is, just use my flyer, which is by me, it's Kathryn Bohr, not Bohr, there's no S.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna take that as a amendment. Is there any opposition to doing this? Great, seeing none, it's amended. Thank you. Evan, you are next.
I want to second the comments that have already been made. I wanted to add one more note. History, the April 2010 vote that failed 10-2-1. This is a charter amendment. It requires 13 people in favor. So that's a way of saying it failed in April 2010, but narrowly failed.
And also by a lack of people attending the meeting.
Right. You'll note that if you add even the 2 to the 10, if the chair had cast a vote in favor of it, it would have passed, but it would have just passed 13. But indeed, I hope it passes this time. I'm sure I voted in favor of it then. on the issue of double representation, which exactly was the point, I think a
wanted to say quickly that if the GPSA finds itself in the problem with too many people who want to get involved, that's a good problem to have. And finally, on Trevaney's comment about having local governments to send representatives to the GPSA, effectively, Geneva already has that in stages.
60 seconds are up. 60 seconds are up. Sorry. Thanks. Do you have any of your next?
I think the solution is a great one. Again, I think that more representation and energy is really good. I wonder if they'll also put up teams to discuss other students on campus that maybe aren't as well represented as the student body. I'm not even aware, I'm part of the campus department, but also the Boys Council for students on campus. There's also the Wild Institute, the Student Institute that has different departments to do student experiences. A couple of years ago, we also had both a kind of diversity student representative. There's groups from the Graduate University Council that include a lot of issues. The whole bigger discussion, this has been ongoing, and I think it's something that maybe as a GPSA, we have more time, is worth talking about. Because here we have two clear examples face-to-face, unadequately represented. So I think there are things on campus that can also have some improved representation here.
Great, thanks, Evgeny. Bill, you're next.
I think this is good, except for maybe to amend some language in the body of the charter that the whole, if you miss two meetings, you're able to be kicked off and replaced by the representative because they may have legitimate reasons not to be here, so there may be some question about amount of attendance that, you know, someone can replace the representative with, so they can maybe talk about that.
Great, thanks, Bill. Adrian?
We're bringing up the last thing on there,
So, briefly, there was a resolution, I think, passed, I actually don't know when it was passed, maybe last year or maybe the year before, that basically said GPSA should reach out to Weill Cornell and their graduate student organization. I admit I have not done that yet, although I have. I know we do have interactions with their student overseer. So we have the board of trustees that oversees the whole university, and they have a board of overseers for the Weill Cornell, which is a cooler name. And there is a student overseer who's a graduate student or a medical student there. And so I know that I think I'm correct in saying that Nighthawk.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's a resolution that has been brought up before and needs to be addressed further. Are there any other members who have not spoken who'd like to speak? Yeah, Rob. Any further comments Nicole?
I was just going to add to that. If you guys have explicit suggestions and you want to come up with amendments, it would be really helpful in the next month to kind of come up with some actual text suggestions, and we can consider amendments to the resolution one by one. I think that's the best way to kind of go through those, if that makes sense.
Great. Any further? Yeah.
My concern would be that if you have a lot of issues in this session or our case-centric housing, transportation, community, and big men are, and I wonder if this is the best way to incorporate what campus is into the graduate professional community. If you look at a time from a meeting where we're just going to speak at people.
You know about it, Evan?
I want to quickly address Bill's point. There's two things to talk about with attendance. The two absences you can be kicked off apply to the voting members, not to field members. For field members, attendance is covered under the FC Commission guidelines. It says basically that your field funding can be suspended if the representative that attends for field funding purposes doesn't attend. So that doesn't apply either.
Is there any other discussion? on this resolution for this evening? Again, this will be on our January 21st meeting. Please, from the audience.
Okay.
Yes, they do have access to field funding, although
For the group can still get funding, but a field organization can still get funding even if their representatives are defaulted on the absence, so they're just going to give the FFL funding, and that's called field funding. So it's like $200 plus the
whatever. Right.
So I'm just curious, like, how many students are expecting to be at Tech Campus?
I think this is an issue we'll have to look at because, again, technically they're already part of a field. So the students will be part of the computer science field. And so in terms of, you know, their field funding will likely have to be set by their field organization. The money that we give them is likely not going to be under that field funding category. And I say likely because I'm not sure. And if there are separate fields that are created that are only at New York City Tech Campus, then that's likely to be the case that they would be eligible for field funding. But if there's a student organization that pops up, like a, you know, computer science in New York field organization that, or not field organization, but student organization that pops up at the Tech Campus, then they would still be eligible for funding from GPSA FC. I hope that answers your question a little bit. But we'll look into it and make sure we get a more concrete answer for you. Eric?
I just want to respond really quickly to the comment you made earlier. I think it's very worth my time to be here as a junior student. Even though many things are, like you said, centric. A lot of the decisions being made are involving money that we pay in, and they involve our friends here on campus. So, you know, when things look specifically like transportation, when we were first talking about this in the campus infrastructure committee last year, and I'm sure the discussions have gone on longer than that, I asked my colleagues in Geneva if they would support paying more money if students could get free bus passes. And it doesn't affect them whatsoever because they would see the benefit of that. But, you know, that's something that we're all still paying into, and it's an issue that we all deal with, and they all supported it. So I'd say, in short, it's very worth our time to be here. You know, it's our community, too.
Great, thanks, Eric. Is there any further discussion tonight? Still have a chance to talk about it on January 21st. Great, seeing none, we'll move on to the very last part, which is open forum for today. And is there anyone who'd like to make an announcement or say anything for open forum? Ken? Great. Let's chat about it more in one of our next meeting. I meet regularly with Kent, by the way. Is there anyone else for open forum? Thank you. Great. Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned, slightly late beyond our amendment. So thank you very much for bearing with us. Have a great winter break. Look, I had to write one.
Yay. Discussion.
I knew we did stuff. We're
debate on resolutions. You can start speaking on the resolution.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you guys?
Good.
So, you guys are going to Washington this week.
We are. Yeah.
So, should we meet after that?
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.